Jazz trombonist, composer, arranger, and educator at the conservatory level, who pioneered the use of seashells as musical instruments. That's Steve Turi with Rainbow People. It's the title track of his 14th album, which was released in 2008. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And guess what we're going to be talking about today? Oh, you sneaky people. Yes, you know. We have to be talking today about Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin and the whole Putin-Trump-Helsinki summit. It didn't go well, as you know, for President Donald Trump in Helsinki yesterday. His ill-timed, ill-advised one-on-one summit meeting with Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin set off a series of political and policy bombs that have left Trump badly wounded and mostly himself to blame. The major media are furiously working the story, but that doesn't mean they're telling us what we really need to know. So that means we have to do something we began doing a long time ago, and that is, it's time for some media literacy around here to figure out what is it that we witnessed yesterday and what do we know about the event and who's telling the story and basically where are things going. For the moment, we are setting aside a whole bunch of things and we're going with laser beam precision on some very pointed questions, because in the end, that's what we're supposed to do, to start an analysis of things. We have to get to the basics. And there's no need to fall in line with what is being reported. You have a mind of your own. You can make sense of the universe just like anybody else. And you are entitled to do so, to see the world from your unique perspective. And that is why we're doing this here, because the perspective of ordinary people, as you would readily recognize, is starkly absent from this entire equation. So we don't know really the degree to which what is being said reflects in any way the substantive views of regular people. We have experts, tons and tons of experts reporting on this, and they essentially are telling us what we ought not just to know, but they've gone beyond that point now to tell us what we ought to believe. And it is a very interesting thing that happens at critical times in our history and with particular types of stories that have such extraordinary impact and range. This is a global story, after all. And so when these stories occur, when these events occur, we find that one of the roles of the media is absolutely unapologetic propaganda. They tell you what to think, they tell you what to believe, and they also tell you that they are right. So today at 888-874-4888, I would like you to share with us your observations. I mean, the story just broke yesterday and it will continue for quite some time to come. But in the direct aftermath, while our sense of observation is keen still, and while our brains are still working, And it gives us a very fresh and original look at what it is occurred yesterday. We can begin to take stock in this business of media, how it controls the world. And first question I would ask is, what would you say was or is the starkest aspect of coverage of this event? Simple question. What would you say is the most significant aspect of the reporting on this so-called summit in Helsinki? Tony from Orlando, you're on the air. What would you say is the most significant aspect of the coverage of the story?
The most significant aspect, and I just heard it from the horse's mouth, is the fact that the media was unable to get Trump to admit to Russian meddling. In effect, delegitimizing his presidency.
I need you to go way more basic than that. You're already several levels above where I'd like you to be in answering the question. Go to the very basic elements of the story and tell us what is most significant about it. What did you notice?
Well, I mean, as far as the media is concerned, it was a lot of big gotcha questions.
Okay. All right. You're still a little bit above where we want to be right now. And I thank you, though, for getting us started. What I'm getting at is something so basic. It should be immediately observable. And it should immediately send a signal to whoever is consuming this information. It's very, very basic, and yet it is extremely important in considering the story and anything associated with it. But you got to start it, Tony. And we will have to take your answer. You're right on point, but I'm looking for an answer more basic than the answer you just gave us. You gave us a little bit more elevated an answer, so we'll come back to you when we can get up to your standard. But right now, we're dealing with this in a very basic way. Thank you for calling in. 888-874-4888. Come on, it's so obvious. I thought you would have gotten this right away. What is the most striking thing? Yes, basic. What is the most striking thing about the story and the reporting of the story? Can you tell us? It is immediately apparent, I should say. Gene from Maryland, what is the most observable thing?
Hi, Utrice.
Hello.
For my money, I think the answer is that it's simply not true.
Oh, no, you were taking us again. You are at a level above us today. I want you to get as basic as you can get.
Well,
and
I
yet
think
it is one of the most significant things about the story.
As basic as you can get. If it's not that it's not true and you're looking for something else, I would have to say then that these things and the responses that we're seeing from all of these former directors of the CIA and former intelligence officers and these people is that our emotions are being targeted. as opposed to the fact of what was actually said and what went down.
Okay. But you're still above us for the moment. You're right on target. But I'm looking for a particular answer because it's the most basic thing about the story. Thank you so much for calling in. Ali from New York, what is the most basic thing about this story?
That the right and the left are together in this propaganda. That's what how I see it.
Okay. All right. You're still at a level above us. You're right. We'll come to your observation, but for now, we will have to regard it as a bit more sophisticated than the level that we're looking at and what we're hoping to kind of point out as we start looking at this particular story. Thanks for calling in. Ephraim Edgewater, what is the most basic thing about the story and the information that we're getting from it? What's the most basic thing?
I thought it was the fact that it was a private thing between Trump and Putin, and there was no press in there. So how do they know all these things? So all these stories that are being told are just like hearsay stuff.
Well, again, that's a little bit above our pay grade today.
Oh, sorry.
Thanks.
I thought that was pretty basic.
Good try.
But,
basic.
You should give us
very basic.
Hint.
Okay. All right, we'll take one more question before I delve into the answer. Walter from Virginia, what is the most basic thing about this story as you observed it?
I think the most basic thing for me is that there are none of the reporters at the press conference were allowed to ask any hard questions, and that all the questions were basically softball questions. And the ones that wanted to ask hard questions were either escorted out or told what not to say.
Okay, you're in the community. You may even be on the right street. I need you at the right house. Could you give it push a little bit? It does have to do with reporters.
Well, I mean, you could dive a little deeper in terms about, the nuclear arms treaty, things of that nature. They talked about all the crazy stories about the Russian meddling and all that, which to me is just a bunch of hogwash. But long story short, I just felt that the tough questions in terms of things that were going on with NATO and the expansion of NATO and that kind of thing that basically shows about American imperialism and that kind of thing wasn't shot. So it always made it seem like, Russia was the bad guy.
All right. And you're right. But it's a little bit above where we want to go right this minute. Thanks so much for calling in. Okay. What do I mean by the most basic thing? On television, on radio, wherever it is you got information about this historic event, there was not a black person or Latino person or any person of color actually reporting on this event. This was a totally white thing. And why is that? It's, of course, because the ranks, the senior ranks especially, of the media still are not diverse. But more importantly, this was a story that had a great deal of significance and historicity attached to it. You cannot entrust history to anybody of color. That's the thinking in the nation's newsrooms. So just about every authoritative source from which we got information about the story didn't look like us, didn't look like the United States, didn't reflect the diversity of the United States. What it did reflect was the reality of the United States and the role of information. When information is linked to the capacity of individuals to come to independent conclusions, you can't trust them to do that on their own. They have to be coached. They have to be told what to think. And the people telling them what to think have to be dependable people. They are to look like reporters, but they're really propagandists. They do not leave it to chance that you should be able to make up your mind, nor do they leave it to chance that any person other than white Anglo-Saxon Protestants in the United States and others, as long as they're white, because this is their domain. Isn't that odd? Isn't that odd? That in 2018, a major event is occurring. It has all these historical tentacles attached to it, and there isn't a single person of color that I saw relating the information to the public. That's the first clue about the role of media in our society. There's no room for diversity. There's no room for taking a chance that other than those reporters who are approved, that other reporters may convey the wrong message. And it only enforced the view that the gatekeepers of news, the people who tell us what news is, what we ought to think, the people who determine what we see and hear and read in the way of information, the essential pattern of thought is that no person of color is capable of reporting properly the story like this, and even if they were, they are not to be placed in a position of writing the first draft of history. They are not to enjoy that privilege at all. So we saw a very white world out there. And that's just the way they like it. Just the way they want it. And we returned back to the 1950s, where we experienced apartheid. And look, you're smart people. I'm a smart person. But we didn't get the message. It was so smoothly done that we did not get the most important message to start with, and that is the news, such as it was defined, was utterly and completely controlled by a white supremacist process that blocked everybody else out. They didn't care what you thought. They didn't care what credentials you had. They didn't care anything about the news experience that you have, the ability to cogently put together a story. The idea was everybody knew this to be a history-making story. No people of color allowed. So yesterday began the process of a blackout, if you will. And much of the story as it goes forward will be exactly in that mold. The media organizations are practicing journalistic apartheid at a very different level, a very high level now. But in no way the consumers of information, or as they would rather think of it, the targets of the information that they're producing, should have no problem readjusting to the old days of very white operation, exclusion in your face, undergirding the bizarre notion that people of color don't have what it takes to handle such complicated stories. So don't worry about that. We'll get to them later down the line. Right now, we are in the midst of a historical moment. They're not up to it. We're leaving them out. And that was the very first message I got. I kept watching program after program, expert after expert. It was an all-white affair. I said, well, this is interesting. So we are looking at a moment in history where the country reverted to its white ways. The first draft of this page of history would be written completely by whites, no matter what side, if you will, that they come down on, no matter what their opinion. The fact is, it's better that they're there than anybody else. They're in charge. And this journalistic apartheid has existed in this country since the beginning of the so-called Fourth Estate. Who is in control of information? Who has the right to determine what you and I should know? And why is it that we should be satisfied in 2018 that such a very important story is being basically hijacked? We have no input at all from any journalists of color. And we are being delivered a predictable, you know, package of goods, redolent with bias and prejudices and personal opinion, reflecting the views of corporate America. In a sense, we ought to be grateful there are no people of color to speak of participating meaningfully in the coverage of this event, because they, by necessity, would have to be part of the exercise of carrying out predetermined outcomes, predetermined opinions, predetermined angles. The gatekeepers of news in this country, the first thing that we should understand about this story, and other stories like it. The people who determine on a daily basis who and what we know about our lives and our environment and what is news, they are devoid of any attachment, any link at all to the diversity of the world. They have no interest in that. Because from their perspective, as they see the world, so is the world. So let's not complicate things. This is what we see, this is what we're reporting, and this is what you ought to be internalizing, and what you are to be making part of your base of knowledge. That's as basic as you can get. Okay, so now that we have covered that, what else do you see in the reporting so far that gives you pause to think about the role of journalism and what it is you, as a consumer of information, ought to be watching out for? Ma'at, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I lost you
Hello.
Guys on Friday, but I enjoyed the program. I rushed to a better phone line and forgot to punch you in on the call line. Listen, I want to comment on your first point, and that is, I think you have something there, because one person, Sam Husseini, he was a person of color, but it's not quite clear how he was roughed up and roughed out, and he was brought back in. He had to get his things, and he had a sign at that point. And I heard some coverage on Democracy Now with Katrina Van. He was with The Nation. And it's not clear why they really roughed him up, you know, and he's not a young gentleman, but it's not clear why they did that. But maybe you have something there. And then he said that they took him to some sort of a detention center in Helsinki where they made him stay there until midnight, until all the media centers were shut down.
Well, let me follow the trend we started out with today. As you can easily see the link, if you follow the train of thought, it really isn't so much that he got roughed up. It is, again, we discussed the absolute absence of people of color covering this event. And that's what we ought to pay attention to. Besides which, if he experienced this, I didn't follow that part of the story, the fact that journalists did not come to his defense.
Good point.
Should strike
yeah.
as unusual, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that's an excellent point, because I saw it was before Putin and Trump came in, and he had mentioned later that they were hours late and they were shuttling the reporters back and forth to the buses. And that's kind of curious in itself, but I got no understanding, because he was credentialed. I have no understanding of what even excuse they use to, you know, literally drag him out of there. I'm sure the footage is available, but it was remarkable. I mean, he was one person of color, you know, a long history, because he's not a young gentleman. And it was extraordinary the way he almost, his glasses got, you know, torn off at some point, and he was eventually able to recover his glasses, or he got a new pair when he went on air later. But it was rather incredible.
Well, it just goes to show there is a planned purpose to the coverage. And everybody representing, no matter what it is, what agency you're reporting for, they understand the rules. Khalil from South Carolina, what have you to say?
Hi, hope you're well today.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
I like, you know, your observation, and it got me thinking. I only remember, I think her name is Aisha Roscoe with NPR, but that's radio, and she was there. But to your greater point, you know, you don't see her face. But to your greater point, it's interesting, Helsinki, Finland. Now, that's, you know, that area, that's the Scandinavia, right? So, and we also have to understand that's part of this whole shift, because Putin is no fan of colored folks. I mean, that's kind of, if you understand the history of how he comes about, you know. And, you know, that this is, like you're saying, that they're sending a signal. See, colored folks need not apply this shift that's going on now. This is a world shift, I think. I don't know. What do you think?
But it has always been this way, which is why it was the first thing that struck me. Mm-hmm. It has always been this way. Nothing significant, especially something that you can readily regard as a historic moment, you're not going to find black reporters or Latino reporters or Asian reporters. You're just not going to find them. It becomes a very white world because the mindset is to protect the information. They are very well aware that this is a historic moment. And whereas in other situations, they might bend the rules a little bit, but this kind of event is not to be available to people of color.
Well, that reminds me of that phrase you hear sometimes, well, it's not an urban beat, so this is not, this story is not for you.
But it also calls into question the commitment of the news agencies themselves. They are the ones who select the reporters to go cover these things. And they choose in moments like this not to have anybody of color draft the first page of history. It's not going to happen. As the first thing that struck me, I said, oh, come on now. You mean not even one, not a brother, not a sister?
Nothing.
Nobody could cover essentially a meeting of two world leaders. Nobody could get that story, right? So it was the very first thing that I keyed in on. And it repeated all these years of journalistic ostracism by the major media outlets and the not-so-major media outlets, which is the absolute exclusion of people of color and basically denying them the opportunity to write history, because this is what it is. Now, if this were a Beyonce concert, if this were something else, a protest, sure. But we have something quite substantive here that deserves the interpretation of people who have never been able to, within the news organizations that they work for, to be assigned to cover anything in the white world that is groundbreaking or history making. It is not allowed.
If not now, when?
That would never happen anytime soon. It's not happening. They will never entrust the historical record to interpretation by somebody who is not white and who is not likely to follow the instructions given.
That's powerful.
Just about everybody in there understood how they were to report on this event. They had very little wiggle room for individual interpretation, which is what reporters should do.
May I ask you a question about the event yesterday?
Sure.
Okay. Is it not abundantly clear that our president is a Russian asset, wittingly or unwittingly?
We'll get to that later on. We're talking about this all the way to Friday.
Okay. All right.
We're just starting to talk about it because, enough has occurred that should give us some insight into what actually happened yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And will continue beyond yesterday, to happen. So we have some time. We're not going to rush this one at all.
I really like the way you're making that connection between what you mentioned, your observation of the lack of diversity and history, because that's what it really, this is history. This is the beginning of something huge. You know, I think.
If you look at reporting of major historical events, even though and even when you have capable people in the newsrooms of America to report on it, they passed over. They're absolutely not permitted. Because in the way that the newsrooms interpret it, they may just subvert. They may just go against the grain and tell the truth about things or cover the event from a perspective that is not desirable to the mainstream media outlets. And you cannot trust or entrust the responsibility of the first draft of history, especially when these things are historical or monumental. You cannot entrust that to people of color. It's a kind of risking journalistic rebellion.
You know what? And I know maybe you have someone else you need to talk to, but you know what's interesting? Has anyone ever asked you, well, let's say someone who's not of, you know, a white person, not of color, blah, 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 whatever, but, well, why do you guys need black movie theaters and black newspapers and black bookstores?
Well, because whites need them. Whites have always needed those things that support psychologically and emotionally and otherwise
but
what they see
right?
as the major prerogatives in life. Mm-hmm. They've always done that as a part of the rights that they have to basically frame the world.
But I mean, I've been asked why as a black person,
define the world as they see it and they know it. We just happen to be occupying the same space, as far as they're concerned. But I can tell you, some of the reporters that I know, if they had attended this event yesterday and had full rein, the journalistic reign, I'm telling you, you have two entirely different versions of what happened yesterday.
Oh, okay. Now you're saying something. Okay. I mean, not that you weren't, but Well, that's the truth.
You have two entirely versions, two entirely different versions. But a situation like that yesterday automatically... The editors understand what it is they're there to do. They got their instructions from their editors and the news executives, the news corporations. A lot was riding on coverage yesterday, which is why they all sounded the same.
Mm-hmm.
There is no independence of thought. In a process like that, it won't be tolerated. You come in there and you're acting like you're a real journalist. That's not going to happen. So when you turned on the television and you see these panel discussion after panel discussion, and they're all talking to each other about the same thing, saying the same thing, there was no journalism there. They were all reduced to stenographers. Just take the notes down and relay the information just as we told you. And then you would have done a great job. Thanks, Khalil, for your call today. We are starting, by the way, this is going to go on for the rest of the week. Because coverage will go on for the rest of the week. And when these things happen, you have to pause and carefully dissect what is happening in your face. But it's not registering. most people who watched or listened to coverage yesterday, the last thing that they're thinking is what we're talking about today. And yet, they will have, by the end of the day yesterday, or even a small portion of the day, exposure to the coverage gives them a very comfortable feeling about knowledge of a situation. When everybody's saying the same thing, isn't that remarkable? Everybody's reporting the same thing. And you're looking, and you're looking, and you're looking because we are told that there has been an erosion, an elimination even, of these barriers in every aspect of our lives in the United States since the so-called civil rights movement. Was it evident yesterday? This is now, I'm not even yet discussing the content of the situation of the news conference and the media. I'm not even discussing that. I'm still at basic. Who is reporting this? What accounts for the sameness of their reports? Why are we seeing very little difference between what reporter A is saying and what reporter B is saying, and what station A is reporting and what station B is reporting? Why are we seeing very little difference there? Why are we expected not to question this? It's a historic moment, mind you. And the people recording the history of the moment looked nothing like me. The people who, when I say they're recording, I mean, let me explain what that means. The people who are creating the document of history of that moment, they're all saying the same thing. They're all pretty much with only imperceptible differences, they're all on the same page. Bruce from New York, what are your thoughts?
Hello?
Hello, Bruce.
Hi. Good afternoon, Idris. I think you're right on the point today. And I noticed the same thing yesterday. I was so sick and tired of it. Everybody was just basically saying the same thing. And all these white folks, as you said, but I noticed before on MSNBC, once Obama was in office, they had a few blacks hosting programs and stuff, Sharpton and two or three others. As soon as Obama is out of office, I mean, all the blacks have disappeared. You know, they appear from time to time, but they're not central to the discourse anymore. And to me, this also demonstrates the nature of a crypto racism that exists. Yeah, you have all these blacks talking about getting black people to vote and stuff for Obama, and as soon as his presidency is done, I mean, MSNBC just changed, just whitewashed the whole station, and nobody seems to notice that except me, maybe, and you. So it's a similar point that you're making. And secondly, during when Russia was a communist country, you know, there's a story that some Russians came here and were flabbergasted at how all the stations would basically have say the same thing, have the same narrative, same general narrative, same discussion, same range of debate, and they wondered how that was possible. I mean, so you basically have what people we in this country like to call a communist country or a dictatorial country, being amazed at something that we are doing, and we're supposed to be so democratic and all this, you know? So I mean, so I just wanted to say these few things today. but you're absolutely right. Yeah.
But let's go to the point that you made about during the Obama administration when you had all these blacks visible. What do you think the real purpose was for them being there?
Well, it was just a matter of corralling blacks for Obama. That's what it was about. And, you know, it occurred to me when it was happening, right? But it's only when it was confirmed once Obama presidency ended and therein ended, you know, simultaneously, yeah? Like Sharpton, for instance, used to have an hour every day. Now they have him for maybe half an hour on weekends, on Saturday or something like that, or Sunday, whatever it is. I don't watch too much of it, yeah? But yeah, I think the NBC was using these blacks as sheepdogs, right, to corral black people into the Obama coalition. That's what it was about.
Well, it was also about the insurance. It was about insurance. In the event that the station, for whatever reason, came under attack for any editorial position that anyone was likely to take, they had a built-in defense, and they had people willing to go to the mat to defend not just what they said, but to defend the station.
See.
So that was a very important part of, quote, integrating the editorial rooms. The gatekeepers understood the practicality of it. They could always say, look, this proves that we are not telling people what to think. This proves how devoted we are to the First Amendment. This proves that we believe in freedom of thought. This proves that we are moving in a progressive way to integrate our editorial product, as they would call it. But the understanding is, if the station should come under any attack, those people that they hired will be part of the first flank of defense.
Right. That's well observed. And these things keep institutional racism in place, you know, right in front of our eyes, and sometimes it's so clever, sometimes we don't notice it. But I also notice that you have the media, especially CNN, MSNBC, most of the mainstream media. I mean, they're joining forces. I mean, a new coalition seems to be forming. They're joining forces with the FBI, for instance, you know, which is historically a racist institution, you know, to defend themselves against Trump, you know? I mean, and this is amazing to me, that you have, these people defending, oppressive, historically oppressive institutions, the FBI, the CIA, you know, these secret organizations, these deep state forces. I even see that progressives are joining ranks with the neoconservatives, you know? I mean, we have a whole different kind of formation coming to fore right now, it seems.
Well, you are anticipating where we're going next, because we're seeing a very interesting realignment of interests in the middle of all of this stuff that is supposed to be about this so-called summit meeting in Helsinki. But it is exposing a lot of things that we ought to be paying attention to. And we shouldn't get locked into the idea of us discussing. They're framing the terms of debate. They're telling us what it is we ought to be concerned about, and even what our positions should be. And our positions should be exactly reflective of their positions. So we're going to come to that. But the most important thing I want in the course between now and Friday, that we kind of disassemble this, because we have an opportunity to observe it and to dissect it and to come to some kind of realization that it's a really interesting moment. Not so much about what they're doing, but what we ought to be doing. informed by what it is, what it is we are observing.
Yes, and the stances are on principle, you know. On the one hand, you know, Putin is a dictator, you know, but nobody says anything about Saudi Arabia, for instance. You know, if you're a friend of America, you could be a dictator. Yeah, they call you a dictator. But even their own president, who is behaving dictatorially, nobody calls him a dictator. I've made this point before. Yeah. So you have some, they have some internal contradictions, and, you know, they can be easily unmasked.
Because we are conditioned to accept whatever comes out of that box, whether it is a telephone that you're looking at, or whether it is a TV or some medium that you're looking at. We are being conditioned to think in a predictable way, but we don't yet appreciate the underlying reasons and the ways in which we are being manipulated. Personally, I like the idea of people thinking whatever they want to think. But we're not allowed to think what we want to think.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, look, I always approach it from the standpoint that everything they say is a lie, right? And I try to find out, you know, what you're asking me. I mean, to understand why they're telling me this lie. You know, my point of part is that everything they tell me is a lie until proven otherwise. Yeah, and then I try to you know, I was laughing, you know, all day yesterday as I watched this thing, because I knew that a game was up. You know, but the challenge was to try to unmask what this game was. And I'm with your help this week, I think I will.
Well, thank you. Thanks for calling in and contributing.
You're welcome, man.
You see what we begin, we haven't even scratched the surface. And already there are so many things that have come to our attention that we didn't think about before. That is how successful this system has been at manipulating our minds. No matter where on the spectrum you place yourself, you don't even have to think very hard. You don't have to think independently about forming an opinion. It is given to you. And you trust it. Why? Because it's NBC. CBS or ABC. It's a big time media organization. It's the New York Times. How are you going to go up against these organizations that are spending millions of dollars to maintain their editorial structure? And you with your puny self thinking that you have an independent thought and that you're entitled to hold on to it, you have to be extraordinary in the face of this to maintain your clarity. But you must. And in order to do that, you have to appreciate all of the elements that you are encountering, even though you may not be mindful of them at the time. But this moment that we're in is a very historic moment. We'll talk about why soon and why it is you have to have your guard on all the time, because the end game is to have you confused, you and me and millions of other people very confused about what is going on. And this system has spent billions of dollars. They've invested so much money in the fine art of manipulating our minds. The questions we should be asking are not whether Trump is more patriotic or less patriotic than Putin, or whether it's Putin telling the truth and is Trump lying. All these are silly questions. And you would see them as such when you get to the conduct of the media, the positions that they're taking, and the road they're leading us down to, so that we come to, at least from their perspective, a predictable conclusion. And it is a conclusion they want us to come to. So let us just, for the sake of being ornery and unpredictable, let's hold on to our minds, shall we? And in this period, when all this stuff is flying around, keep your mind free and clear. Stay very strong and centered, and make yourself as uncooperative a target as possible. Thanks so much for contributing today and for listening. And we come back tomorrow to continue the conversation. Bye-bye. I'm sorry.